I have a very old friend here in Amsterdam, and I, with all due respect to the wonderful community here, which I didn't expect to find, I actually came here to meet him. He's not so active in devotional service right now, but he's my friend, and I don't let go of my friends. I have faith in him, and he has done a lot of devotional service, and he will do more. Right now, he may not be so engaged, but he's my friend. And I don't care. So we were on the phone together, came here to meet him, but unfortunately, he was in Canada. Minor detail. You know, when I was young, my mother and my grandmother told me, eat a lot of carrots, John, and you'll be able to see in the dark. And I ate a lot of carrots, but I need glasses. It's a botheration, you know, after 50 years of, you know, 20/20 vision, having to put on glasses all the time. No cash. So we were just having one talk, negotiating when we would get together. And I didn't realize that I was required here. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva. Manmanabhava Madbhakto Madhyaji Manamaskuru Mame Vaishyasi Satyam Te Pratijane Priyosime. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. A very famous verse. Maybe one of the most often quoted verses. And the essence of bhakti yoga is given. There are, some people think that there are a lot of rules and regulations in bhakti yoga and it's too difficult. But there are actually two rules. Who knows what those two rules are? Yeah. Always remember Krishna? Yeah. Always remember me and never forget me. Always remember Krishna and never forget me. So, in one sense, there's only one rule. Because if you're always remembering Krishna, then you're never forgetting him. And if you're never forgetting him, then you're always thinking of him. So, there's a saying in English. There's a big distance betwixt the cup and the lip. In other words, you've got your cup of tea and, you know, hot cup of tea, but, you know, there's between the cup and your lip, there's still a big distance. You could spill it or anything could happen that hasn't. It's not in your lip, it's not, you haven't had your tea until it's in your mouth. Or another biblical saying is, the devil is in the details. In other words, always think of me. That's, oh, okay, I'll always think of Krishna, but how to actually do that, you know, I remember once Hayagriva, Prabhupada told him, while he was quoting, he was talking about Yamunacharya, and Yamunacharya said, Yadavadi mama cheta krishna padaravinde navanava rasa damanudhyata rantumasit tadavadi batanari. Every time I think of sex life, which, what's wrong with sex, you know? It's just, all the animals do it. It's, you know, it's enjoyable. Well, it's fine, but it rivets the mind into the body, and it keeps you here in the material world perpetually. So, you know, if you want the upside of sex, you have to take the downside also. It goes with it. If you pick up one end of the stick, you also pick up the other end. If you want the enjoyment of the senses, you have to suffer the miseries of the body also. And is it equal? Or is it better? Or are you actually getting a bad bargain? So, Yamunacharya said, every time I think of sex, my lips curl, and I spit in disgust. Well, he's thinking that I'm forced to take birth again and again and again because of my attachment to the body, and there's nothing quite as effective to make us attached to the body as sex life. So while Prabhupada was saying this, Hayagriva, who has always had a smart remark for everything, said, actually, every time I spit, I think of sex life. In other words, Yamunacharya, you know, every time he thought of sex, he would spit. But I agree with saying that every time I spit. Or in other words, our minds are quite polluted. And, well, it's our thoughts, and we're lucky we don't have to pay for our thoughts. We're really lucky that there's no karma involved in thoughts. We're in this Kali Yuga, that's kind of a benediction. But if you had to actually be responsible for your thoughts, I don't know about you, but I can only assume that your thoughts are as bad as mine. We're conditioned in that way. And when I came from India, there was a movie on the plane, and I just happened to be sitting right in front of the screen. Not that I avoided watching it, but it's hard. So this was called, it was with Mel Gibson. Heard of Mel Gibson? Okay. And he had some accident or something. I don't know, he got electrocuted. Something happened whereby he could hear everything women were thinking.
What women want?
Huh?
What women want?
He's seen it too.
No.
And you know, I mean, I guess this was, you know, nobody objected to the movie being made. It's true. It's what women and what men think all the time. A man is, there's a saying, there was an article in the New York Times, because of all of the infidelity and how lightly Americans take it and how it's breaking up the whole social fiber of the country. At one time there was sometime in the 60s, the government proposed that the communists were sending people to America to encourage the hippies, so that the whole, you know, sex and drugs and rock and roll revolution would demoralize the whole and destabilize the whole country, so that Russia could, you know, easily take over. Well, there's some truth in that, but I don't know how much the Russians had to do with it. The certain country certainly became destabilized. But the point is that the thoughts that were coming out of some of the women that he was hearing were pretty gross. But it's not that we also don't have those gross thoughts. So this New York Times article was there, and it mentioned different jokes that were going around, and one of them was that a woman wants a man who will satisfy all her desires, and a man wants all women who will satisfy his one desire. So this, it really does bind us to the material world, and we're, it's like Indran is when he became a pig. He just couldn't get it. He just, you know, Brahma had to actually kill his wife and children, because he was so attached to being a little pig and having a sheep pig and piglets that he didn't remember that he was actually Indra, the king of heaven. So we can't remember that we belong to the eternal spiritual world. We're caught up in the body. And therefore, there's no question of being able to think of Krishna and become his devotee if, you know, if we're caught in this trap. Therefore, assessing or analyzing our situation, looking at the fact that we have to get old, we have to get diseased, and we have to die. Now, there is an increasing, there's a recession coming on, and there's increasing unemployment. I know I have some disciples in Croatia who, in Kirk, one girl works at a hotel, and she doesn't get any salary. She just works there because she gets a chance to get her meals from the kitchen. And it's becoming like that. It's going to probably get worse in the ensuing recession. So just imagine you've got an employer who is going to take your service and take your work, and at the end of all that work, he's going to cause you a lot of distress and harass you, and at the end of all your tolerance and your hard work and everything, he's not going to pay you anything. So I don't think there's any of us here who would, in a sane mind, in good consciousness, would accept such an employer. We would not take such a job. But it has been noted that we are prepared to work so hard to satisfy the demands of the body, and the ultimate payment that we get is old age, disease, and death. We're not thinking. We're just following the status quo. We're just like lemmings. We're blindly following without actually considering. Even spiritually, people they're not spiritual. They're simply following what their father and their father's father did. I'm a Christian because my father was and my father. It's not that they've done an in-depth study of philosophy and religion and they've chosen that this is... I mean, some of my favorite people are Mormons because they're really nice people. And especially their preachers, they're all like, you know, nicely dressed, clean shaven, clean cut, and they're really gentle, and then they'll come and take a tour. They come to our programs in the Balkans all the time. I see them, they show up, and I asked them one time, a group of them, there were about five or six of them, I said, why do you guys come to our programs? And they said, for the good food and the good association. They don't meet people normally as good as devotees. So even the Mormons, they're into proselytizing. They want to make the whole world Mormon. And so I was in Salt Lake City once, and I was talking to one Mormon who was at the house of one of our Indian Life members, and they were trying to convert him. And I was there. So I asked him, why? And he said, well, Mormonism is the best religion in the world. And I said, well, what other religions have you tried? Nothing, but, you know. In other words, people are doing, they're not studying and finding out the essential points, the essence, but they're just going very blindly forward. So we don't want to do that. We want to find out the essence, and of course, we do call that Sanatan Dharma. One can be a Christian or a Hindu or a Muslim. Actually, can't be a Hindu. There's no such thing. A Hindu is a myth. The Hindu just means Khichdi. You know, whatever you do, you can call it Hindu. You can worship the vacuum cleaner. You can worship the telephone pole. And you can say, I'm a Hindu. And everybody, oh, yes, he's a Hindu. He's a wonderful Hindu. But it's a word given by the Persians to the people on the other side of the Indus River. And they were called Hindus. And, you know, guess what it became? Hindus. So there's actually no such word in the Vedas. But one can be a good Christian or a Buddhist or a Muslim. Actually, can even be a good Buddhist, because Buddhism is really not a very it's not a very together philosophy. One of their tenets is that the creation is eternal, and therefore there's no need of a creator. Creation is eternal. You don't need a creator. You don't need Krishna. You don't need anything. Then another one of their tenets is that nirvana or annihilation is the goal. And where's the question of annihilation if the creation is eternal? It's not possible. And then there's all kinds of holes in their philosophy. They have nine principal essential points. And the ninth one is that they strongly encourage Buddhists to show compassion to others. And that's why you'll find a lot of movie stars and musicians and different kinds of people, they're all, you know, Buddhism is the religion of the month, or the religion of the decade, you know, it's the flavor of the flavor of the month. You know, you go to an ice cream parlor and they have 32 different flavors, and Christmas is the flavor of the month, you know. So Buddhism is kind of popular now. They don't follow Lord Buddha. Once someone asked Prabhupada, what about Buddhism? Prabhupada said, oh, you are a Buddhist? No, I wanted to ask it. Prabhupada said, you do like Lord Buddha. You go to the forest, you know, then you can talk to me about Buddhism. None of them do that. They just, you know, who is it? Richard Gere, you know. He claims to be a Buddhist, but what does he actually know about Buddhism? Sweet nothing. But compassion, they like that. Show compassion to others. But it's a completely relative term. I can show compassion to someone junior to me, but, you know, I can show compassion to Prabhupada? How would I be compassionate to Prabhupada? He can be compassionate to me because I'm so much inferior than him. And I can be compassionate to a non-devotee. But it's a relative term. It's not absolute. Just the very concept that there's no absolute truth. Is that absolutely true? That there's no absolute truth? So, you can be a good Christian. Yeah, you can be a good Christian. They're doing okay. They should stop beating their mother, but apart from that, by following the principles of Sanatana Dharma, they'll become better Christians. So, here we are. Krishna's giving these two rules. Always think of me and become my devotee. Again, you know, you've got the classical case of the man who tells his wife that he loves her. And, you know, he's very good at telling his wife that he loves her, but he never buys her any saris or any bangles, or he never takes her out anywhere. You know, she's going to think, what kind of love is this? You just tell me you love me, but you don't do anything for me. This is an interesting idea. Love, that word love, you know, it's very popular. Probably the most popular word in the whole language. Is it a noun or is it a verb? Huh?
A verb.
It's more of a verb than it is a noun. When you talk of love, you have to create love. You have to do something. Love is not made in Hollywood. Love means that you have to build relationships, and that means you have to do things, you have to sacrifice, you have to share, you have to dadati pratigranati guyam akyati prichati bhunte vojayate chaiva sadvidim priti lakshanam. Priti lakshanam, these are the lakshas of love, the ornaments or the good qualities of, or the methodology of creating love is that you give and receive gifts and you share your, open your soul, open your heart to your beloved. This one, the lady was telling me about her relationship with her fiance, or actually, anyway, her live-in boyfriend. Anyway, and she was telling me that he professes that he likes her, loves her, needs her, but he can't open up. And what she really wants him to do is open up and reveal his inner thoughts. She wants a deep relationship. And that's actually what love is about. It's having that much faith in another living being, or ideally in the Supreme Lord, that you reveal your heart. Guyam means confidential sharing. Sharing confidential things. Guyam akyabhi prichati. Bhunte bojayate chaiva. Someone may wonder why we emphasize prasad distribution, but taking food, sharing food, is actually a very spiritual and a very loving reciprocation. In fact, the quickest way to a man's heart is through his stomach. Anyway, it's just an ancient pastime of sharing a meal with a friend. It's very kind of deep. It's not just the food, it's the love and the thought that goes into the bhakti. Yome bhakta prayachati. Krishna doesn't need our food, but he wants to eat our love, wants to taste our love for him through the effort we've made to cook what he likes to eat and to cook it nicely. Worshipping is something that you do automatically. It is a natural tendency in society that people follow leaders. There are certain people who are expert examples of this. There's one country very close to Amsterdam where they're fanatics about it, but it's their whole history. They get one leader and they all line up behind him, and then he doesn't work out and they get rid of him and get another one, and they all line up behind him. Huh? No, it's the other direction. Haribo. No, the Germans are very much into their leaders. But everywhere in the world, the tendency is the same. Yad yad acharati shreshtas tad tad evitaro janaha. So yet pramanam kurute lokas. Loka, the common people, lokas tad anuvartate, they will follow whatever the leaders do. Or jivo jivasya jivanam, one living being is controlled by another. It's a natural rule of nature. You find it everywhere. So what we want to do, the tendency to worship is there, to eulogize, to respect, to be impressed by, to love. The Croatians always tell me, and it sounds pretty far out, when General Tito, I mean, if you go deep into it, he had faults and problems, but on the surface, he was very much loved by all of Yugoslavia, Slavia, anyway. But when he died, practically the whole country stopped, and people weaving in traffic stopped their cars. People got out, they were crying, because he was very good. He kept the country peaceful, and he was expert at dealing with the Russians and the Americans, because both were after him to unite. And he never lined up with the communists, and he never lined up with the Americans, the capitalists, the allies. He kept playing one against the other and getting favors from both. So he was an expert diplomat. But he did a lot of... he helped the Yugoslavians like most of us. had a strong sense of, those that were small in number, but they had a sense of national pride, and he did a lot to make them feel proud. So when he died, they cried. Krishna is advising Arjuna, if he wants the greatest benefit, that he should direct that tendency to worship towards the Supreme, i.e. Krishna. He will get the greatest return on worship by worshiping Krishna. And now this is the one time that Krishna is making this, thus you will come to me without fail. He's making a promise. Pratijane means I promise. Now we've heard before that Kunteya Pratijami Janihi Name Bhakta Pranasati. He tells Arjuna that you declare it, Arjuna, that my devotee shall never perish, because Krishna wants, people think that Krishna, he enticed Yudhisthira to say Aswatthama was dead. I'm sure you all know the story in the Mahabharata war. Dronacharya was one of the leading soldiers on the battlefield, and because he was employed by the Kauravas, he had to fight on their side, and he was undefeatable. So there was one weakness that he had. He was very attached to his son, Aswatthama, and he became disheartened. Krishna knew he would become disheartened if he learned that his son had been killed. And you see that happen. It's not uncommon that a father will invest all of his hopes and joys and whatever in his son, and then the son dies, and then he practically dies a short time after that because he feels he has nothing left to live for. So Krishna killed an elephant named Aswatthama, and he told Yudhisthira to say Aswatthama, and then under his breath, the elephant is dead. And Duryodhana heard that, and so he threw down his weapons and was able to be killed by Drishtadyumna, who was actually was destined to kill him. But Krishna, at that point, he wanted Arjuna to declare it, because people might say, well, you lied, I can't believe you. But Krishna will always keep the promise of his devotee. But here Krishna is directly saying, he's not saying, Arjuna, you declare it. He is declaring himself alone, I promise you this, that if you just focus your mind on me, yada sangharate chayam kurmanganiva sarvasya, you withdraw your mind from the distraction of the material world. There, it's hard, I know, because Maya had, Prabhupada came to New York, and he went to 46 Times Square. He went to Times Square, 8th Avenue and 42nd Street. So many bright lights and glare and glitter, and so many brothels and nightclubs and cinema halls, and Prabhupada just laughed. And he said, Maya, you've done a really good job here. So, here in Amsterdam also, a lot of opportunity for sense gratification. Drugs, sex, all the regulative principles are well organized here. The breaking of the regs. It's well organized, and And, you know, our peers are all out there engaged in various ways trying to exploit material nature. So for us to control our mind is very difficult. We have to learn how the tortoise does it, how to withdraw our senses from the sense objects, and how to fix our mind and senses on devotional service. And really, it works like this. You need to be fully engaged. In other words, if you come to the temple, you should demand. This is the only time you can demand. You should demand some devotional service, whether it's cleaning the floor, cleaning the toilets, doing the arati, whatever it is you're qualified to do. But we need engagement in devotional service. It might be selling books, it might be going to congregational programs and teaching people how to offer their food, and anything you can think of. But we need to engage our senses so much so that we have no time left to indulge our fantasies about material life. And we do have fantasies. It's a dream world. And you know, you can dream until the cows come home. You know, that means a long time. The cows are out to pasture. It takes a long time for them to come back to the barn. So you can dream and dream. But that's not going to win you the lottery. That's not going to make you the most popular movie star. It's not going to make you attractive to all the women. It's not going to... You're still going to have to go through your karma. And it's going to hit you at any moment from any direction, and you don't know, and you won't be able to cope with it unless you learn how to be constantly engaged in Krishna service. And there's no time for Maya. And Krishna's making this promise because Arjuna is a bhakta, sakha. Bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam yetadutamam. Rahasya means I'm telling you the confidential knowledge. And that confidential knowledge is sarva karma krita hoy. Krishna bhakti koile. Sarva karma krita hoy. Just by engaging in devotional service to Krishna, everything will be done. You know, someone, you tell someone that, and so they do an hour service at the temple, and then they go home and their house burned down or something happened and whatever. They come back, hey, you told me a lie. I did some devotional service and something bad happened to me. It wasn't, come on. You know, why are you bluffing? But it's not so shallow like that. At least I'm still, it doesn't do me any benefit. I don't gain any benefit. I'm never going to see any of you again. Hardly. Maybe one or two. I don't know. And you're certainly not going to interact with my life. You're already sponsored by this one or that one. It's highly unlikely. But I'm sitting here after a long time, you know, more than 30 years, 32 years of devotional service, and I'm telling you the same thing. It takes a little time. But you'll see that all your problems will be solved just by engaging yourself in thinking of Krishna all day long. Keep, when you're doing your work somehow related to Krishna. And I don't even care if you have a karmic job and you're surrounded only by non-devotees. You can still, if you're determined, you can connect it with Krishna. It takes a little effort, but you can do it. Now that's not ideal. Ideal is that you have a job in the devotee business, but we don't have that developed a community yet. That's unfortunate. It's always tougher for pioneers, and we're pioneering Krishna consciousness in the Western world. Malecha Desh. It doesn't matter what you do, become Krishna's bhakta. You can, it just doesn't matter. Life is too short to get hung up on what other people think of you. They're not going to be there to help you at the time of death. They're not going to be there to even help you in the time of your need. You know, you want to see how many friends you've got, then just announce to everybody that you lost all your money and this happened to you and that happened to you. And, you know, those same people who you thought were your friends, well, you never hear from them, will actually be with you all the way through, thick and thin, very few. So you got to invest where you get permanent dividends, and that is in devotional service to Krishna. And I'm telling you, it's my experience. And forget me, who am I? But there actually was a person named Srila Prabhupada. He was there. He was a real person. And he told us he had nothing to exploit us. In fact, he wants to be remembered for it because he put it in his books everywhere. And there was a person named Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinod, Rupa Manjari, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Madhva, Ramanujan, and Bharka. So many great personalities all telling us the same thing. Why do we have to be such skeptics? Okay, we don't want blind faith, but take a chance. You don't need to have blind doubt. Take a chance. Give yourself to Krishna. Completely give yourself, and then be patient. All of your problems will be taken care of. And Krishna promises this. And I believe him. And you have to see if you do. In the science of bhakti yoga, the word Prabhupada, see, who was it who said it first? Anyway, one, let there be, I think it was Bhaktivinoda, let there be one religion, one mantra, no, it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one deity, Radha Krishna, one mantra, Maha Mantra, Sanatana Dharma, like that, because we have a tendency to get confused and bewildered when there's too much variety. Okay, no doubt Krishna and his plenary expansions are, there's no qualitative difference. So theoretically you could be a devotee of Varaha, you could be a devotee of Rama, you could be a devotee of this or that, and you should get the result. But the practical fact is that people have too many choices. They're like, you go to a restaurant, you're at home, and your mother comes and serves you what she knows you like, and you take it, and it's a wonderful experience, you enjoy yourself. And then you go to a restaurant, and maybe they have good food, and maybe they don't, but looking at that menu is a lot of anxiety. Well, what should I have? Should I have the Pioneer Board Chase? Should I have this? Or, well, if I take this and get filled up with that, then I won't be able to have that, and I like that. And, you know, it's a whole, it's a trip. Too much variety, it's like, it's bewildering. So it's better just to worship Krishna. Vaja Krishna, Koro Krishna. How does it go? Shika Krishna, Vaja Krishna, Koro Krishna.
Anybody know
Shika.
That?
No?
Yeah.
Vaja
Krishna, Koro Krishna, Shiksha.
Shiksha, yeah. But there's more of it. Anyway. Okay, again, I apologize for being late. And, maybe I had legitimate reasons, so you don't have to be too hard on me. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
So when Ulysses spoke his life, then I read that the chariot went down. So some people they say it was because
No. The chariot didn't go. Well, okay, the chariot went down and Yudhisthira went down. He was actually, even if he got off the chariot, but he was still above the ground. His foot never touched the ground wherever he was.
But went down a little bit or something happened. But some say it was because he told a lie, and others say because he didn't immediately did what Krishna
said.
That's right.
He hesitated. He hesitated.
That was the reason.
Yeah. The reason he was up was because he had such integrity and he had such faith in Krishna. He was such a good Krishna bhakta, but the whole Mahabharata is a lesson in how to be, just like Bhagavad Gita is a lesson. It's not a treatise on war, but it's an education for all of humanity how to become Krishna devotees. And Arjuna's, Yudhisthira's Leela is also the same thing. It's there for our benefit, albeit it is history, it is itihasa, but Krishna has this wonderful ability of organizing everything in the material world, and this whole conflagration took place just to enlighten us, and Yudhisthira hesitated to serve Krishna, and therefore he lost his potency. Now I have a similar story, not of course as glorious as this, but the first time I met Prabhupada, I had a beatific vision of something so wonderful. And I saw Prabhupada walking, and I felt very good. I felt like he reached out and touched me. I felt very clean. And I saw Prabhupada walking in the temple at Frederick Street towards the Vyasasana, and there was a bubble around all of us. But wherever Prabhupada walked, the bubble receded. He was outside. I could tell he was transcendental. And he sat down on the Vyasasana and began to speak. And then he coughed. And then he, just for your own knowledge, Prabhupada once gave a class and the deity doors closed and the devotees bowed down. He said that, you know, this is not proper. You just go like this. Because you're already giving oral reception to Krishna's message. And to stop that, to concentrate on eye darshan, it's both a contradiction and it's a mistake. Preaching is far more important than any other kind of worship. Preaching, Shravanam, Kirtanam. And also it's a distraction to the speaker because he loses in thought. So I lost my train of thought.
He
was walking and he got to the Vyasa Sangha and he sat down. He began to cough and he forgot a verse. And I thought, you know, what is this? Pure devotee, greatest person in all the universe, and he's forgetting. And immediately the bubble popped. My vision was destroyed. I lost it. Because I lost my faith. I hesitated in my faith in Prabhupada. And therefore, operation that was done to my eyes was again covered over. So, you had a question?
Yeah, sorry, can you answer that? Sorry about that. And the question was, how do you preach to people that do have knowledge of like Christianity? I know you can burst Christianity like that. I mean, that's quite easily done. But people like Muslims who are very, very strict in their way, and they come up and start giving you a lot of hassle, especially when you're out.
I've never met born again Muslims, but
no, but. You know what I mean? Any religion.
There's some very good Christian people, but there's a particular breed of them who are like really mosquitoes. You know?
They do get quite often.
Born again Christians. You know, yeah, have you bathed in the blood of Jesus? I don't want to bathe in the blood of Jesus. I want to bathe in nice water. Yeah. Bathe in the light of Jesus. It's when preaching is a real art, a science and an art, both. And we have a tendency to, due to some imagined attack on our false ego or due to insecurity, whatever, we want to show off our knowledge so we'll speak beyond our own realization. And that doesn't attract anybody. People actually buy the preacher. People are not so much interested in how much you, they don't care how much you know, but they want to know how much you care about them and about your belief system. People are not very well equipped to understand philosophy, believe me. Maybe one concept at a time, but you know, we like try to throw the whole Bhagavatam at them in 10 minutes or less. You know, it goes way over their heads. Concepts and ideas that even we're still grasping with, or grappling with. And so that you got to learn how to just be relaxed. You can afford to be a little funny.
Yeah, it's quite
and
hard.
Spontaneous, huh?
It's quite hard when they're spitting at you or throwing a punch at you.
Then you probably, if they're spitting at you.
Yeah, I mean, you get some people that are really, really set in their religious ways, and they don't like you preaching, you know, on the street where they live or in the area where they live.
Oh, well, then you have to calculate whether most of the people feel that way, and you're not going to achieve anything by asserting yourself, or B, if they're just a few obnoxious people and the general people are uncommitted, which is more likely the case, and you have every legal right to be there, then you've got to stand up for your rights and call a policeman or, you know, take some heavy action because you have a right to expose people to higher philosophy. And generally I've seen that when these obnoxious people attack devotees, the general public will come to the devotees' rescue, because if we haven't had any recent bad publicity in the newspaper about abusing children or cows or women or this or that, then usually people think we're peaceful people and they like us. They don't dislike us.
Huh? You haven't been out in Amsterdam?
I haven't been out in Amsterdam?
No. You should go out in
Amsterdam. Why?
It's the Wild West.
Huh?
The Wild West.
Oh, it's the Wild West?
Yeah, it can be sometimes. You get the odd person, but you get a lot of tourists here as well, which are high on drugs and, you know, intoxicating and all sorts of different.
Oh, well, you know, it's people high on drugs, I remember. We used to preach to all the kids. Of course, this was in the flower power days. So I think what you have today is drug addicts, speed freaks, and meth freaks and whatever. But we used to meet people who were stoned on acid, and we'd have a lot of fun with them. Tell them how. Yeah, and then Lord Balaram jumped from this planet. All the way over to that planet. Oh, yeah. Showed them a picture from the Krishna book. You can have a lot of fun with that. And give them a, you know, some really tasty sandesh, you know, a little piece. But I don't know. I don't think that. Again, it's the same thing. If you sense. And you know that the majority of people are either neutral or even slightly favorable. At least they're favorable to free speech. And somebody starts attacking you, you just have to be a little expert at jujitsu, you know. They're attacking you and you throw them in such a way that you get the upper hand, you get the advantage.
But it's a lot harder when you've got handful of books, you know?
No, I don't mean physically throw them. I mean you use their energy to attract the crowd and show them we're just here trying to give out love of God and these people want to beat us up and, you know, the crowd will take up your cause. I've seen that happen once in San Francisco. We're out in Powell and Market and this guy used to harass the Sankirtan party all the time. And finally one day he was harassing the party. And this big guy, I don't even think he was a devotee so much, he just got agitated. He was about 6'6" and weighed about 300 pounds, and he just came over and picked the guy up and said, you know, leave these people alone. Yes, sir. You know, we never saw him again. And I've seen that in college too. I was preaching in Austin, Texas, which is one of the biggest campuses maybe in the world. At that time they had about 80,000 students something, and we had a traveling party there and we had a real nice setup. Good harmonium player, and we had a good kirtan party and very nice display boards and book table and everything. Sure enough, these Bible punching born again fanatics came out and started to harass us, every devotee. And finally the whole football team came over and started, you know, they did not like the fact that their campus was becoming the domain of, you know, the born again Christians thought that this is our territory and you can't come here. They didn't like that. You know, that we will choose what we want to do, not you. And they chased them all away. And in Gainesville also, this has happened a couple of times. The devotees give out a lot of prasadam and two things have happened. Many college kids come and get free prasadam at noon. And they give donations, and usually, amazingly enough, the donations cover the full cost of cooking the prasadam and the plates and everything, and a little left over. But, you know, everybody's only, somebody will throw in a dollar, somebody will throw in 50 cents, somebody has nothing, somebody will give $10, and it averages out. But two things have happened. One is that twice the faculty has tried to throw the devotees off the campus, and the whole student body went on strike and objected because they liked, they weren't, you know, they didn't have a lot, you know, they were students, usually students are a little bit poor, although this is a little rich kid college, actually, from all over America, kids come. But anyway, they went on strike and the faculty had to back down. Twice they tried to throw us off and couldn't get away with it. The power of prasadam. And also they've had numerous experiences where they have been harassed by people and the authorities have come to their rescue and supported them fully. And the authority would say, you know, when I was going to school, you guys fed me, and, you know, and other situations where, there was one situation where boys were on a traveling Sankirtan party and they had a van full of books and they stopped at this supermarket or something and slept in the van overnight. In the middle of the night, five cop cars come and, you know, shine their lights and cops get out and they start yelling, get out of the cars, put your hands up against the car. And, you know, devotee gets out, one devotee, of all the devotees got out of the van, one devotee goes up to the officer and said, well, what's wrong, officer? He said, we're just Hare Krishna devotees and, you know, we're not doing anything wrong, we're just sleeping here. And so then the officer said, he was a, I think he was a sergeant, or he was either an NCO or an officer, but anyway, he said, oh yeah, he said, well, where's your books, where's your Bhagavad Gita? So the devotee came out with the Bhagavad Gita. He said, oh, okay, you guys are devotees. He said, when I was going to college, you guys fed me, and my mother taught me never to bite the hand that feeds you. And so then he called all his, you know, people over, and he made everybody buy a Bhagavad Gita. So you can turn a bad situation into a good situation.
It just seems a never-ending problem sometimes. When you go, especially when you go to low poverty areas. You know,
go to?
Low poverty areas.
Well, if you go there just to take money from or something, if you go there to give books, it's not. It depends, but first of all. Dridra dosho gunarashi nasya. A dridra, a poor man, loses all his good qualities. Secondly, a poor man is preoccupied with filling his belly and taking care of his wife and, you know, 14 children or whatever it is. And the last thing in his mind is a Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah,
or
if they got more than like two or three children, then obviously I would give them a book, you know, because you still get the knowledge.
Yeah, but usually poor people. There's other cases where poor people are amazingly pious, like in America. The blacks and the Hispanics are much more pious than the WASPs, the college-educated white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. They're simple, they're poor, but they're, you know, they've got a little religious culture. I was just, I don't know if I told you, but I had this tape that one of my friends gave me. Aretha Franklin.
You were saying during the shower.
People get ready. Beautiful tape. But the train that's coming. Gospel, Christian black gospel music, it's, you know, they're the people who today, there's not so much emphasis, they're merged with the melting pot of America, they're all into sense gratification. These are the guys who are all the actors, all the comedians, all the football, basketball players who earn millions and millions of dollars. While back in that period, the same talented people were into praising the Lord. And of course the Hispanics, one third of America now is Spanish speaking, amazingly enough. So many people have come up from Mexico and from South America that Hispanics comprise practically 30% in the latest census. And most of them are some kind of Catholic. Some of them are like the French. I am Catholic non pratique. Okay, any other questions?
Excuse me for bowing down.
Excuse you for what?
For bowing down.
When?
Oh,
that's just a minor detail. It's just something that, you know, sannyasis travel, and in my case, you know, I've been around for a long time, so I've heard a lot of things. And, you know, we just pass them on, but it's not very serious stuff. Like when I came in the temple room, some people offered their obeisances. But it's right there in the nectar of devotion in front of the deities. You shouldn't offer your obeisances to anyone else. Prabhupada's an exception because he's our founder, Acharya. But, you know, sannyasi walks in the temple. Well, you know, it's nice. And you can offer your obeisances to the deities and also intended for him, but it's not like you turn around and your feet are facing the deities and you're bowing down to this personality. That's offensive. In the temple room, Krishna is our focus. And it's all little things. Yeah.
And you were saying about Kali Yuga thinking, so we're not responsible for our thought, but as soon as you speak out,
then karma, then you are. Yeah, thinking, feeling, and willing. When it comes to the stage of willing, then you get reaction. When you do something, or sound was very potent. World wars are started on the basis of sound. Trading epithets, people trading insults or threatening, whatever. Nothing's been done, but they, you know, they verbalize and then they start fighting. Most fights start with verbal abuse. So sound is, it's good to always think good thoughts and speak nicely. You're not responsible for your thoughts, but it's bad energy, bad thoughts, bad energy. It will pollute you. It will build up. It's got to come out somehow. There's no utility in negativity. No utility at all. Negative energy, negative thoughts. No benefit to anyone. No benefit to you. Okay. Prithviraj. Srimad Bhagavad Gita.